Righto, money miners, me and JD at the helm today. Trav's off gallivanting in Bentang territory. Hope he's staying off the mushies over there. Mate, JD, what do we got today, mate? South 32's quarterly. We've got Remelius's quarterly, which is bloody, we already knew was bloody good.
Bumper takeover for Base Resources. They're trading up 115%, and that's nowhere near what the takeover premium is. What else have we got? Adriatic,
bit of a going owner-operator. 29 Metals, bit of an offtake finance deal. Boss Energy produced the thing we've been waiting for. Mate, bit more on uranium. Interesting news out of Global Atomic, which has been going on for a bit, but thought I'd cover it. And some metallurgical results for the gold at Delta Lithium's Mount Ida. JD, she's all bloody gay.
Let's get into it, mate. Where should we start?
I think South 32, a company that is dear to the money of mine heart, especially Mr. Rick Ardinio, in his absence, mate. What's going on?
All right, so a lot going on. Obviously, they produce a bunch of different metals. Let's focus on the manganese at South 32, Matty. So Groot Island. Obviously, they were subject to the cyclone Megan that we saw about a month ago now. So lots going on there. A few other things throughout the quarter that we touched on. They pressed go at Hermosa, I think about a couple months ago now. Our feelings have been aired on that subject. They've got the sale process at Illawarra going on as well. Now, I'm actually very keen to see if BlueScope take up their rights to buy the couple mines that they've got there. So Gear/M Resources, who are the ones who've got the bid in, BlueScope just has to match what these guys have bid, and it's game over. They won't have the option to put in a competing bid again. It's and done not and dusted.
Yet, not yet determined.
No, but the clock is ticking there. So
yeah, right.
So it's, I think from memory, 60 days they had. So yeah, we'll wait and see on that front.
But how'd the quarter look first glance?
Pretty average, you know, not exceeding expectations, you know, maybe slightly negative. You could say there are a few weather challenges and a few other shortfalls across the board. Obviously, what we're going to speak about, manganese, was a bit disappointing from the company's point of view. That said, though, the stock was up 6%, so there's something that shareholders clearly liked.
So it must have been, if you discount the manganese issue for GEMCO, it must have been all right, considering the timeline that they put on GEMCO being restored.
It's very hard to say, though. Perhaps there's things about the announcement at Groot Island GEMCO that were perhaps better than expectations. You know, very hard to say. There's, you know, insurance plays its role, and maybe shareholders think that insurance will cover it. I mean, what we can say is that the period that GEMCO will be offline is substantially longer than what consensus expectations were. So that was about 6 months. We're talking about 12 months, that asset being offline. You know, that said, in and around the insurance point, Matty, there wasn't an awful lot of new information. We know from a month ago now that they have insurance, like all these companies do, on the asset. So we'll just have to sort of wait and see what happens there. But we can go a bit deeper into everything that's going on. They had a snippet which will flash up on the screen now regarding their Australian manganese operations, and I'll disclose that I own a couple Jupiter. Feel it's just appropriate to say that, given that South 32 and everything going on here plays into the thesis there. But no secret that the infrastructure at Groot Island got pretty badly smashed up. We flashed up photos last time of the ship getting whacked into the wharf, roads being flooded, pits are full of water. So there's a lot going on there, as we sort of discussed at the time. What they've come out and said today is that the wharf, the port infrastructure, the haulage bridge that sort of gets the product from the mines to the port, all needs to be repaired, essentially. You need mining pits that need to be dewatered as well. And the preliminary restart, so it definitely wasn't definitive, was for Q3 FY24, about a year's time. So engineering...
Q3 FY25.
Yep. 25, yeah, that's the one. Yep. So they got engineering studies looking at fixing essentially everything I've just listed there, and they're also looking at alternative shipping options. You'd expect them to do something like that to see if they could potentially get something going while other parts are being restarted.
And no sort of guide on the cost capital for it yet before the studies are done, eh?
No, that's right. So the consensus, a rough consensus expectation from a few people that had been speaking about it, a few analysts, was around $200 million. Given that this is 6 months longer, you could perhaps anticipate that you know, it's going to be even more costly. We're talking a pretty long time frame there. So something, you know, in the order of hundreds of millions wouldn't be a big surprise to me. And I think it's worth looking at the pool sods at 29 Metals at Capricorn Copper and how that played out. I think it's interesting to see how the reporting changed over time there. So I just looked back today and you could see when they first reported, they said the operations are going to be suspended for 3 to 4 weeks. Then a week later, they came out with another update and they say the operations are going to be suspended for 3 to 4 months. And then 2 months after that, so roughly 2 months after the weather event impacted Capricorn Copper, they issue new guidance for the second half of 2023. It was about in May 2023 that this update came, as well as calendar year 24. And these numbers were, you know, a marginal percentage of what full operations would have looked like if there hadn't been that weather event. And we know how things have sort of progressed from there. Obviously, just last month, another update came through on that front. But I think it's kind of interesting to sort of see these companies. Obviously, they don't have all the information. They're just working with everything that they've got. And it's hard to sort of assess how long things are going to take and how much they're going to cost in the immediate aftermath. And these updates just come out over time. And, you know, sometimes it looks better than you might first expect, but oftentimes it looks a bit worse than you might first expect, especially if you're trying to see the bright side of the road. But what we can say is that GEMCO is about 12% of global supply of manganese. So manganese, the market, is going to be in deficit for the next year. And the prices were coming off multi-year lows. You can see that's a relatively opaque market. It's not the easiest to get a good feel for. But a lot of companies, they put up charts in their presentations, and you can see that we're coming through a bit of a cycle where prices were pretty beaten up. And I think it's interesting to go back to our thinking about how commodity prices are impacted by supply shocks, Maddie. And we had a great chat about this, not Friday, but the Friday before that, talking about tin, PGMs and a bunch more stuff. So you can go and check that out if you want the deep dive. But the quick sort of take is that when you've got things like inventories and all these in global metal markets, these supply shocks take time to work their way through. They are dampened from the immediate impacts, and it can take weeks or months, even longer, for the disruptions to be fully, you know, presented in the price. And we're seeing it in tin. You've seen the disruptions from what's happening in Indonesia really playing out the last month or so. We've seen in copper, we were speaking about some of the assets across Latin America being disrupted last year, and now it's only the last month that these smelters are really feeling the pinch of this concentrate shortage.
Length of the supply chain.
Exactly. Yeah. And the same sort of goes for manganese here, Maddie. So we can see in a chart that one of the companies chucked up. Now, this is specifically showing manganese imported from South Africa into India. And you can see in early April, there's a slight tick up in the price of manganese. And that's weeks or after the cyclone's impacts already. So just to tie it back around to South 32, they do have manganese operations in South Africa as well. So, you know, it's not all bad news on the manganese front. They will get a bit of a kicker from that part of their business. There was one other detail I wanted to round off on with South 32, Maddie, and that's this beautiful chart that Trav whipped together, when was it? About a month ago, when he was sort of outlining the incentives behind Mr. Graham Kerr, the CEO's payday. Now, these are referring to his FY21 long-term incentives.
Yep.
About $10 million on the line here for himself. And what he needs to do, or what he needs to see the South 32 stock do, is beat this BMI mining index, and two-thirds of that 2.5 million shares will vest, and beat the MSCI world index, and the other one-third will vest. And for those listening in on the chart, he is just ahead on both. 82% is the shareholder return for South 32, 72% for that mining index, and 59% for the MSCI index. So 5 weeks to go for Graham. He will be biting his fingernails now. That is a big payday that could come down. You know, it could go right down to the wire there. So I'm sure he's going to have a few sleepless nights over the next few weeks.
Oh, mate, he will be cheering that, and which is probably why, you know, South 32 is getting a bit of a bounce. You know, zinc prices are going up a bit. Silver's going very well, you know.
You took the words out of my mouth, mate.
Cannington is zinc, silver, and then you've got lead.
Aluminium, alumina, these metals have had a bit of a kick too. So, it's... you know, six of these, half a dozen of the other, because you need to beat the metal. One of them is the metals mining index. So you need to do better than what those companies do, or match them given where you are. So hopefully he can just keep his nose in front, you know, for his sake.
Trav didn't get his bet away. He was over 6 months.
6 months. That might go down to the wire too.
It's even though it didn't get placed, it's still a bet in my eyes.
We'll have our eyes on it, mate.
Very good. Right, Ramelius, we spoke briefly about them in their pre-quarterly. My fucking thing's just sorted. Here we go. We're back.
Big result.
Big, phenomenal result. 125 mil free cash flow for the business. Cash and gold now sitting at 407 million. 407 bucks of cash. Have a look at that. And you read what they've said here. They're essentially forecasting a further cash build of 100 mil this quarter coming. So stating they expect to make another 100, like they said, guiding for full year in cash and gold to be well above 500 million in the next quarterly. So essentially saying they're going to make another 100 bucks of free cash flow. So, and they've also got 100 mil debt facility if needed as well. So look, guidance has been upgraded by them twice this year, started at midpoint of 262,500 ounces. Now it's up to 290,000 ounces. So it's been a good year, reaping the rewards of previous M&A and work, you'd say. So,
yeah. Well, let's go around to a couple of the assets. Why don't we start with Edna May and sort of see. Well,
that's the one that people would know is ramping down on the mining front. So due to go on care and maintenance next year onwards, next calendar year. So old Zeppi anticipates that would be, if it does, probably only $1 million or less a year in care and maintenance costs, which seems pretty light. And I think they said they're going to, you know, move a lot of personnel around to avoid redundancies. They do have the option of a stage three cutback at Edna May. So I think they're doing a study on that. Looks like it's not that'd be like an 18-month job to sort of get that done and going. But looks like cash flows from Mount Magnet might keep things going, and they're not in desperate need of doing that just to keep Edna May going. So, and because the Edna May underground is also finishing this quarter, they said they could go deeper, but they encountered a lot of high pressure water at depth. So
it's not massively surprising that, you know, cash performance is really strong as an asset comes to the end of its life.
Yeah. And so in terms of what they're processing, like you see they only mined 252,000 tonne of ore and they process 557,000 tonne. So because they've got the remaining stockpiles at Marda and Tampia being hauled to Edna May, then Symes is due to complete mining this quarter, but they'll be processing the stockpiles for the remainder of the calendar of the year. So they got 1 million tonne of ore in stockpiles at 1.6 grams sitting across those three operations. So it's a 2.9 million tonne per annum mill. Looks like they're running it at around 2.2. So that's those stockpiles and what's left of that Edna May underground. That's the two quarters worth of processing. So their realised selling price, $3,014 per ounce. And so they delivered, I'll bring up the hedge book, they delivered 30,000 ounces at 2702 this quarter. So they've got another 30,000 ounces to deliver this quarter at 2769. So the full hedge book is 180,000 ounces at 2993. So it's about 120, 130 million out of the money. So they did say in the conference call they're looking at put options or things like that for to see if that's something they would do to offset the hedge book with the cash they've got. So didn't say that's what they are going to do, or they're just going to keep chipping away at it. The hedge book does drop off, start dropping off from next quarter onwards, but they're obviously going to replace it. Depends on what they replace it with, JD.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's quite a bit of hedging they've got.
Yeah, well, because they're going to bring online Break of Day, which is what they got out of the Musgrave thing. So that first ore is scheduled for FY25, and I think the honey of it starts probably the start of 2025 calendar year. So there'll be a bit of will give a bit of an overlap to Edna May finishing, but it's still waiting on sort of final approvals. So I think they haven't got the final approval yet, but it is coming. So Penny's only got 2 years,
yep,
about, and like there is maybe a bit more on the fringes and everything, but the sugar hit of Penny, that's pretty limited. So they can, And there will be a – when they bring the high grade of Musgrave or Break of Day on mixed with Penny, they have to do a bit of mill upgrade at Mount Magnet. So as we said, because of the higher grade going through, you need more electro-winning circuit, bigger gold room, more gravity as well by the sound. So a bit of work to do there. So, but it's just, God, tough having high grade, isn't it, JD?
Well, I mean, the thing is neither of these are a super long mine life thing. So it's a trade-off between upgrading the mill and everything and the, you know, everything that goes with that and the costs for something that, you know, only has a few more years itself. So, yeah, might have to go and spend some more money to buy the next thing afterwards.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine it'd be shitloads, but
mine
and fucking the cash they're making, they'll pay it off pretty easily. So, looking long term for them, because this is one thing that won't last forever. Are they gonna buy something? Like they're at that point, like beyond that 2 year point. Like it looks like a lot of the stuff at Mount Magnet is, you know, open and going to continue. You look at how deep the Hill 50 mine went, and their mines there at the moment are, you know, parallel to that. So unless they absolutely chop off, but if they follow Hill 50, there's going to be gold there. But are they going to buy something? Or because you can't see Roe and Rebecca sort of being in the mix for another 2 to 3 years. I wouldn't, because they're hamstrung by Northern Star wanting to sell Carosue Dam as the easy processing option, or they do have the option to build it themselves. There is a PFS coming out this year for it. They could build a plant there. I'm sure they wouldn't want to if Carosue Dam is a much easier option and built already. So
the economics just look so different if you have to stump up and build that mill yourself.
Yeah. So when they've got, God, half a billion, so after next quarter, they're going to have, what, 600 million in available liquidity.
Yeah.
But maybe instead of fronting up the cash for a Spartan, which is sort of just sitting there, but as we said, it's getting pretty pricey that people mightn't want to cough up. Like, God, I think today it's sitting at, what, 700 mil market cap after the funds go in. So, you know, got to cough up $1 billion to buy it nearly at these prices. Maybe they'll take the imagine if they took the Tembo holding or the Delphi holding. So Delphi hold about $85 worth of stock at 65 cents. Tembo hold about $105. Can't say they don't have the cash for it. They might be able to just, that might be an easy way in. And because if they're, say, for Emilius took that stock and they become like a whatever, I think the Tembo's about, I think it's 15% or something.
Yeah, we'll see. Jeez, I mean, we don't know if they tipped into this raising and maintained the pro
rata. Yeah, we're yet to find out who both crossed the NRW holding and who tipped into this raise. So that'll be interesting to see if they did participate in that or not, or who else did. But it would be a deterrent for other parties once they took that control. So we're very interested to see if they just do pop up on the register after this, or they look to cross out these Delphi and Tembo holdings.
We'll be
We will be watching, JD. We fucking will be. Mate, very funny question in the investor call from a so-called private investor.
Why don't you play it out for me, mate?
Here we go.
Your next question comes from Rob Waugh, with a private investor. Please go ahead.
Mark and Ben, congratulations. Not enough said and well done on the quarter. Fantastic performance. Couple of quick questions. Q approvals, what's the progress and when do you see access to the sort of top of the Break of Day ore zone in the open cut?
Thanks, Rob. It's Mark. And I appreciate your comments at the outset there. In terms of Q, we've done about 3 lots of back and forwards with the department. We think we're pretty close to getting approvals. We've got some of the approvals through, but obviously the main mining proposal approval is the key one. In terms of access to the sweet spot of Q, which you're obviously very familiar with, assuming we get started early in the financial year 25, we probably expect to see that early calendar 25, so sort of January 25. To that point, we're actually looking at what we need to upgrade. It's a nice problem to have in terms of the Mount Magnet, gold room, gravity circuit, electrowinning circuits, because if we have the break of day, you know, white heat, high grade zones coming in with penny in full cry, we need more gravity and gold room capacity, if you like.
Good position to be in, I think. So that was it. Well done.
Thanks, Rob.
Now, I was looking at the transcript and it said Rob Wolf, and then I was listening. I'm like, I swear they said Rob War. Rob War being obviously the ex-top dog of Musgrave.
I have an interest in the company.
Just like, what's going on, Zeppy? How's my little mind going? So he's just checking up on what's going on at Musgrave. So I would have bloody, he did, as he said, as you very well know, I would have been pissing myself. He did well to hold himself together there, I reckon. So, yes, anyway, all looking good for Ramelius for the next bloody couple of years, that's for sure.
Beautiful, Matty. Well, great work.
Set up to print cash and bloody on top of their cash. Mm. So, JD, Base Resources, never heard of them, but I'm going to be a guru after you give it to me, mate. What's happening?
Mate, we've spoken about these guys once, maybe 6-odd months ago. They're a bit of a quirky company. They were paying dividends, but they had short mine life and then development projects coming that still needed approvals with a bit of a gap in between. So it had investors somewhat nervous. But the big news though, mate, a takeover, and it's a takeover premium and a half, maybe the biggest that I've ever seen. Energy Fuels have reached an agreement to buy Base Resources. I think Energy Fuels is also one of the blandest company names I've seen. Now, this deal is reporting it as equating to 30.2 cents per Base share. So Base shares currently trading at 23 cents, gives you a bit of an indication of what their shareholders are thinking of the deal at the moment. So the holders are set to receive 0.026 Energy Fuel shares per Base share, plus a special unfranked divvy of A$0.065. So they're calling this a 188% premium to the last traded price and 173% premium to the 20-day VWAP. Now, you might be wondering, Maddie, why the hell have they bid, you know, what happened to the traditional 30% premium? This is crazy. Now, the reason they've had to do that, similar to how we discussed the Decmil deal last week, is it's all got to do with the shareholders. The two largest shareholders at Base own over 51% of the stock. So we're talking about Pacific Road Capital and Sustainable Capital. So there's no way any deal is getting done without the backing of those two. So the bid price has obviously got to be agreeable to them and something. And, you know, that's what it's been done at here. These guys have given their support along with the board of Base Resources. So to put it in context, Energy Fuels is, in Aussie dollar terms, about a $1.5 billion company. And this bid values Base at $375 million. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
It's a big swing.
It sure is. And I had to look in a bit further. Like yourself, Maddie, I haven't followed Base too closely. I've looked at them a while back, like I said. But I can't say that I saw this deal coming at all. And when I look into it, you know, I definitely wouldn't have seen it coming. It's a bit out of left field. Energy Fuels is essentially a uranium company, and Base Resources is more or less a mineral sands company. So in terms of synergies, they're talking about capturing additional value through processing monazite from the Toliara asset that they have in Madagascar, sending it all the way through to their White Mesa mill in the state of Utah in America. So jeez, they want to separate out rare earth oxides. The White Mesa mill that I talk about there isn't even ready yet, though, so it's hypothetical. And then when, you know, you talk about further synergies or whatever, they talk about potentially unlocking US government funding for the African assets. And that is, you know, not the most sturdy footing to pin your M&A hopes on in my book. And it's interesting to see the stock, like I mentioned there earlier, Maddie, trading substantially below the bid value. Given it's a scrip deal, I'm going to be very interested to see how Energy Fuel, who trade in America, trade overnight. So I think it's pretty unlikely, if you're a Base shareholder, that you're going to want to hold stock in a company listed in America. So that's perhaps a reason why it's trading where it is. You've, of course, got the time value of money. And it seems pretty clear that nobody is anticipating a competing bid coming through. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Energy Fuels stock trade down a bit overnight. You know, beside that being quite the norm for the acquiring company, you've got a bunch of shareholders in the stock that are predominantly there for American uranium exposure. with perhaps a little bit of rare earth exposure on the side. So we've got to see how they're going to enjoy minerals, sands, assets in Madagascar and Kenya, plus exposure now across four different continents. So,
mate, lucky you're here, JD, because Trav's away. I would never have bloody plucked this one out. You'll notice in the director's special this week, Money Miners, there might be a lot more gold, uranium and underground mining because, buddy, I'm 50% of the content at the moment.
Maybe so. Slightly less Sierra Leonean content.
Yeah. Oh, mate, Adriatic Metals, corporate update. Companies, bloody, look on the back of zinc and silver and everything flying up, they're going pretty well. $4.50 they're trading at now.
Mate, so. They are flying from when we first spoke about them about a year ago on the valuations that I've seen, they're trading over 1x NAV now. So they've been very much rewarded, like you say, for the metals prices kick up that we've seen recently. And as well as that, the de-risking of the project in Bosnia. They're moving from becoming a developer over the past year into a producer. And as a bit of a side note, Maddie, I can't help but notice that they've done a huge amount of marketing lately. I'm not sure if you've caught this, but on social media, even on the ASX platform, they're putting up heaps of videos, regular updates, you know, CEOs and management of the company posting photos and everything, a big official opening and all these sorts of things, setting off a couple alarm bells, but by and large, things have gone pretty well for them.
Yeah, right. So today's announcement, JD, past all the marketing and everything, the true facts. So what's happening?
They are transitioning to owner-operator, and this shouldn't be a massive, you know, secret. They'd signed a deal with Nova, who's the mining services contractor in Bosnia, a couple years ago now, June of 2022, but things hadn't been going so well. So my first thought when I saw this pop up is, do they have the cash for this? They're still, you know, at that low working capital cycle point coming out of, like, you know, they've only just very recently started to produce concentrate. And we'd spoken about how low their sort of cash balance was a little while ago, you know, sort of par for the course of where they are. But that was my first thought, and we'll just sort of put a pin in that for now. So like I said, there was issues with the contractor that had sort of surfaced a year ago. And we touched on this at the time, the ground in which they're operating up in the mountains in Bosnia was giving them a bit of grief.
Pass,
exactly.
Pass is the technical term.
That's the technical term. And what Adriatic had done is they'd implemented a bit of a strategy or a plan to get a lot of operators from predominantly Australia, definitely overseas, to come on board and sort of help educate the local workforce there about how, you know, perhaps a bit of Australian underground mining expertise. So that had started happening a year ago, and that sort of leads it to being not a massive surprise that they're going to now terminate the contract with the mining services contractor Nova, and this will involve them paying US $11 million out to the contractor.
Mm. It's interesting you say it, JD. So it's one thing's the whole bloody high speed development in Australia, and that seems to be the catalyst for the, you know, the increase in development rates you can see. But it's with 70 because so it's gone up 71% the development. And persisting with the poor ground conditions. So you could say it was probably Australian, like the Australian operators that went over there on the jumbo to bloody get it going. Or I'm probably leaning towards on the back of our recommendation to get the DSI ground support in is probably more of a reason why that development rate's gone up.
I think you're spot on. When they sort of, you know, when you know you're getting DSI in, you can sort of expect 70% uptick across the board. That's a rough number.
Off the bat, like, because I can't confirm if it was there already or they've just got it in, but look, it definitely lines up pretty well with us calling them out that they need to make sure all the ground support is DSI. And hey, what do you know, development meters have increased. And mate, it doesn't matter if you're in Bosnia or Australia or bloody China or America or whatever, DSI are the bloody global name for ground support, and they will send it anywhere. And there is shitloads of it. Splitties mesh the bloody every type of friggin' expensive ground support to support the shittest ground in the world. DSI have it, and DSI will send it. So,
and yeah, but Adriatic, it just pays for itself, doesn't it? 70%+ tick
look
up.
Look at that. Pretty bloody, that's pretty, it's conclusive.
That's it.
Thank you, DSI, for saving Adriatic. Now, JD, the $11 buck US payout.
Payout, yeah.
Is there a bit of have they snuck anything in here to complement that?
I think there's a little bit of obfuscation going on here, Matty. So transition, we're talking about 60 days. Now, US $11 million is what they need to pay. Now, that's not just an upfront payment. They didn't break down exactly when. They said a bit needs to be paid upon the termination and then a bit when they get this operating license and whatnot. But it's over a bit of a period. And you can see that they've added another US $25 million in debt with Orion, who've supplied the $120 million US in project finance debt that they already have. So, you know, in simple terms, Maddie, you'd know as you move from contractor to owner-operator, you sort of expect your OPEX to come down when you're owner-operator. And obviously Adriatic are expecting a kick-up in their top-line performance as well. But a bit more CAPEX because you need to, unless you're renting, but you might need to buy the equipment and whatnot. So they are getting a bit of more debt coming online from equipment finance as well. But
I think it's the existing finance things with Sambic and stuff they've mentioned in there.
Yeah, exactly. But 25 million new debt coming on to make a staged 11 million payment, that doesn't sort of totally line up. So I don't think they're tricking any of the money miners here. And this company sort of done it before. They did in August during Diggers of last year, they raised US 30 million. You know, that was ostensibly raised for exploration. But we spoke about a month or two ago about that things might be touch and go with their finances this quarter and the next quarter. And, you know, you look back and you see they raised US $30 million and they're pretty touch and go. Things were getting quite low in terms of a cash balance. If they hadn't raised that cash, things would have been a whole lot closer. So, yeah, I think it's just another one of those where you say it's for one thing, but it might help cushion you across the board. So this US $25 million, it's a little bit quirky. It's going to be available to them purely in the final quarter of this calendar year, and it needs to be repaid within 6 months of utilization. Now, like I said, US $120 million is what they've got in senior debt already, and that has repayments that commence at the end of this calendar year. So, you know, despite a bit of hand-waving and perhaps a bit of obfuscation, Maddie, I still think equity holders would probably be happy given how much cash flow this asset is, you know, purported to produce over the coming 3 years, and it looks like it will. I think they'd be a bit more comfortable with a little bit more debt coming on rather than issuing new stock. So
yeah, like, and you got to, if since the stock has rallied and as you said, trading at pretty good bloody NAV ratio, and they're taking on more debt, that's instead of raising money. So that's probably a tick, I reckon.
Yeah, a little bit more leverage to the metals prices, but you know they should do quite well at the back of it if things, you know, go as they should, as they plan to.
Going well isn't a term used for this next company too often, but bit of reprieve going on here for old 29 Metals. They've secured some offtake finance from Glencore and getting a bit of an interim payment for the insurance claim. So start with the offtake, JD.
All right. So US $50 million facility with Glencore. Now, 4.5 year facility, but no repayments for the first 4 years.
Oh, that's all right.
So that appears pretty appropriate in my eyes for their situation and how we've discussed the medium term playing out at Capricorn Copper. It's a subordinated package. So what that just means is it's going to sit below their senior debt that they've already got. Of course, they would have had to speak with their senior lenders and get the approval here. There was no way Glencore were going to slip their way in to be more senior than all the debt that the company's already got. And obviously it's in the name. It includes a long-term concentrate offtake agreement as well. So, you know, Glencore isn't in the business of giving away anything. So they're going to get paid. The interest rate, again, SOFR plus a margin. As usual, the company isn't sharing that. That's not exclusive to 29 Metals. I hate this. With a margin, just tell us what a buddy is.
Just, yes. So now the insurance claim, JD.
The insurance claim. So we've spoken about in the past, they received $24 million. They've got a further $16 million as an interim progress payment. It obviously brings what they've received up to $40 million. But Maddie, importantly, this is for damage to surface property and the associated business interruptions from the surface. The underground component, this was a predominantly an underground mine, is the big one, and discussions are ongoing. And they do note that this will be accelerated now, the underground component, given what we've just said has been, you know, done and dusted and is out the way for now. So I'm still of the view that 29Metals will need a bit of new cash to see them through. We've spoken in the past about their net debt, you know, profile, and in particular their EBITDA to net debt, you know, how these ratios are looking. They're not looking too pretty at the moment, as you'd imagine. But there's a bit of a number that's very hard to quantify, this underground potential insurance payout that they'll get. We've got no idea really what it could be. Some analysts think it could be quite chunky. Others aren't attributing much value to it at all. So some are
attributing nothing to it.
Yeah.
They mightn't even get anything.
Yeah. So it's a very hard one to quantify, but we'll just have to wait and see. And I mean, hopefully for the company's sake, they get a bit to relieve some of their stresses, but we'll have to wait and see on that front.
Yeah, I suppose copper and zinc going up sure as hell going to bloody help them for Golden Grove, but it's not like it's a huge, going to be like fucking bring an extra $100 million in the friggin' door or anything quickly.
They need to get that to positive cash flow, let alone numbers like $100 million. Yeah. That is, it's not gone too swimmingly over, you know, out here in the West Coast for them either.
I'd hope some of this bloody offtake finance facility goes towards some frigging get wet bladders to sort out Capricorn Copper, JD.
Mate, we should flash up the photo again.
This was my solution that I handed to 29Metals on the platter. Most responsible thing to do with the cash, I would say, to sort that bloody water out. And, mate, once get wet, finish saving the day for 29Metals, or then sort them out first. Yep. Probably going to save every other industry as well.
Mate, and I reckon Get Wet do a whole lot more than a lot of the money miners might actually think.
Mate, they help joints get less wet, like 29Metals. They help joints get more wet. Money between, that's dust suppression, mate. Firefighting, water storage. Get a fire wet if you get one.
Mm.
Mate, have it ready, there you go. Mate, camps, construction works, processing plants, civil works. Mate, alternative to building a frigging huge turkey's nest. Emergency water backup, mate. Get Wet do the whole bloody thing. The piping, the pumps, the design, the install, only ones in Australia.
What do we call this, Matty? This is a turnkey solution.
Mate, don't worry about the turkey's nest. Get a turnkey solution to replace the turkey's nest.
And 29Metals might have been forgiven for thinking that they don't operate out east, you know, back in the day, but that is not the case. These guys operate
Aussie
everywhere.
Aussie-wide, and, mate, he's over in Indo at the moment. He's worldwide.
Yeah.
Matty Hall. Bloody.
Get in touch.
Mate, what's that? I was just thinking prestige. Worldwide. Love your work. Get wet. Get wet, everyone. Buddy, no, Boss Energy, JD, you called it out last week. You were waiting for the uranium, or maybe Travelers. Everyone was waiting for the uranium.
Yeah, I was itching to see it, mate.
It's here.
It is here. This is what we're talking about. Companies actually producing stuff.
They've got uranium, but that was about all. Like that was, there wasn't a shitload of colour on it, was it?
It was a ridiculous announcement. You know, there was the line that you wanted to see. The first drums have been produced, and this, you know, multiple couple week delays doesn't seem to have given any investors any reason for a pause out there. The stock's up 4% today, though that is sort of in line with the broader uranium sector today, all up quite a bit. Matty, I didn't like the announcement today. I know Boss has had a hell of a run, and I'm not talking about their valuation here. Like we say, there was a holdup here, and the company is just not saying what was causing any sorts of problems. We were expecting this announcement a month or so ago. Just be upfront, explain to the owners of the business what is going on. This announcement was a page and a half. They spent half a page talking about exceptional shareholder returns, then they just talk about how Honeymoon is exceeding the company's expectations, and a bit more about highly successful commissioning process at Honeymoon. Just get a bloody grip. Tell the owners of the business what is going on.
We want to know how easy it's leaching, if there's any leaching dramas to get the wells going. Want some bloody detail on it.
Yeah, we know these things, you know, aren't always straightforward commissioning and all that, but just be a bit more upfront there. It was a load of fluff today.
Not when we start our bloody small cap alternative JD.
Watch this space.
Watch this space. We're going to bloody shake this industry up one day, I reckon.
I reckon, mate. Oh, all righty.
Global Atomic. Now, I don't know if we've talked about them. Keeping on the uranium theme for a bit, JD.
On to Niger.
Niger, so which is north of Nigeria. It is a different country. It's like landlocked. It's north of Nigeria, east of Mali. So right in the sweet spot. West Africa. So they've got the Dasa uranium project in Niger, which is under development. It's underground uranium mine. I think they've already developed down to the sort of first level of the ore. So it's been happening. They updated the fee study, so due to produce about 2.9 million pounds average per year, peaking at 4.9, so pretty decent lot. So pumping more out than boss. So they're still in the process of securing like a debt funding package for the remaining sort of pre-production capital. Circa around remaining is about $225 million US, and they're, you know, in talks with this sort of Canadian Export Credit Agency and a US development bank. And I think it was sort of due for approval this month. And look, politically a lot going on in Niger. So had a change in government last year. Then you had the US sort of vow its support to help the country transition to democratic rule and like putting military support in to also assist with the counterterrorism efforts in all these West African countries being affected by Al Qaeda and Islamic State. So, but a news article came out last Friday saying that the US are withdrawing their troops from Niger. So because there was articles a week and a bit ago, and probably more, that Niger appear to be aligning themselves with Russia for security, and the US was also claiming that Niger had signed, or looking to do a secret agreement with Iran to supply them with uranium. So, which you can assume is Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium to a military grade and being used in weapons. So,
yeah, huge point of contention.
Bit of a no-no there. And that saw US and Niger sort of sever their counter-terrorism alliance that they had. So this news of, I guess, the US pulling out of Niger has put their debt funding package in serious question. So, Niger sounds like a bit of a loose place. Because if they can't get that debt finance package, they might have to look at a bloody massive equity raise or like a JV with someone else that would be comfortable operating in Niger. A lot of moving parts. So I'll be keeping the eye on what happens here. So absolutely. Especially when they're so close to, like, it's in development. So we'll wait to see what the Global Atomic share price. So I'll flash it up here. It has pulled back a bit. Be interested to see what happens to it trading tonight.
Yeah, Niger obviously a relatively meaningful producer of uranium.
5% of the world. Yeah. I think it's the seventh biggest in the world or something like that.
So I believe the French utilities source a lot of their.
Yeah, most of it goes. I think that because Global Atomic had offtake and everything sorted. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah,
so
hopefully it
one of those West African jurisdictions. So. Mm.
All right, let's round out on Delta Lithium back in WA, mate.
Yeah, I think, God, they've still got $100 in the bank. They put their quarterly out today, but that is separate company updated, and it had metallurgical results on their Mount Ida gold deposit, which we've talked about the known copper there.
The money of mine. Head of metallurgy here.
Oh, mate, our goods, Matt. I'm even getting pulled up in the street for it now. So the question was, what impact does this known copper have on this gold metallurgy? Well, the results have come back pretty good. So, look, you can see here the fresh rock, that three composite tests, an oxide, a transitional, and a fresh. Mm-hmm. So the fresh rock had the highest amount of copper, 1,100 ppm, or 0.1%. So, and they got 93% recovery over 8 hours, 96% over 48 hours with 1.25 kilograms per tonne of cyanide used. So that's not bad. Most mines use half to 0.6 kilogram per tonne. So it's like, it's obviously double, so it's a bit more costly, but it's not unheard of. It's not crazy. So so it must that copper bearing mineral must be a chalcopyrite or something similar, is because it's got the pretty low cyanide solubility, which they state. So it was interesting they had low cyanide consumption in the oxide sample with 500 ppm copper, because from what I've been told, chalcopyrite usually isn't present in the oxide. It can be, I think, if it's all disseminated or something, but it's because chalcopyrite's a sulfide. It's not usually an oxide. That was interesting. So maybe it is there. But I guess I wanted to look at, had to do a, you got to do a double check on this shit, JD. Absolutely. Wanted to know if the 1100 ppm fresh rock sample was a good indication of what the material will be, because that's where your bulk of your material comes from. Fresh when you're an underground mine, once you get through all the pus.
So yeah, your thinking is, you know, you wouldn't want them to go too light on versus light on what the
copper, what might actually be there.
So it's got to be representative.
Yeah, so I went through back to that sort of 4th of September announcement, which detailed all the gold holes drilled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through put them all, good old Excel, you know, I figured out you can take a screenshot of something and then go into Excel and go to data and say from picture and from clipboard, and it bloody transfer. I didn't know that Excel did that. You have to fix a couple up. So I did double check it. So all holes better than from the big table, 1 meter at 1 gram per tonne. They had an average copper grade of 2,115 ppm. And then if you go all intersections below 200 meters downhole, they average 2,500 ppm. So remember, their test was 1100. And then if you go all holes better than 10 gram meter cut, they had an average grade of 2,500 ppm copper, and all intersections below 200 were 200 meter downhole length, so not exactly. We're averaging about 3,400 ppm. So I'm like, well, geez, that sounds a lot higher than the sample. But remember, money miners, you don't just mine the vein by itself. So a lot of these intersections were, you know, half to 1 to 2 meters, and then that's wouldn't be your true width of what you're actually mining. So it appears to be sort of a narrow vein ore body. So once you actually do mine it at like a 2.5 meter minimum stoping width, you halve the gold grade. And like, say if it's a 1 meter vein and you're mining it at 2.5, it's about 40% of what the gold grade is in the vein and what the copper grade is. So it would dilute down. So I'm thinking, 1,100 ppm based on that, based on the minimum mining width, probably looks like a pretty good representation of what that fresh rock will be. But so, number one rule in mining investing, don't trust anyone. Always check shit.
Very well said, Matty.
So well, first pass. Looks like a good one.
Yep.
So there you go.
Bloody, as we say, we'll keep following it.
Oh, that was one of my first bosses as a young whippersnapper said, don't trust. No, I can't say the last word he said. No, he said, trust no.
I get you. I'm sure the listeners get you too. Beauty, Matty, great
shout
work.
Out Tony Sime.
Got a couple of partners to thank.
Mate, we have the top of the show. Get Wet.
And DSI Underground.
Oh, geez, talk about two companies saving the world. Saving the world. Mate, Verify, bloody AI and the shit out of the world. And Silverstone, powering the world. How good are they? Anytime exploration. Seamus Murphy, Farid, is there anything that bloke doesn't do? Mate, WA Waterballs, they're bringing that much bloody uranium to the world in the future and water and everything. Brooks Airways, flying everyone around Australia, and they'll fly over the world to save people as well. And K-Drill.
Hooteroo.
That's all. I just need to say K-Drill.
K-Drill.
Hooteroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.